welcome to episode 4 of Wrestling Europa. I'm your host Martin Bushby as we take a look at everything happening in the European wrestling scene. And my guest this week is Tom Campbell, a man who's appeared in a variety of different wrestling promotions as commentator, general manager. He's most famously known for The Biggin in Wigan, which we get into. And he's also a DJ for Heart FM. So without further ado, let's get on with my guest, Tom Campbell. And we're back on the show with Tom Campbell. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, hello. It's yourself.
It is indeed.
What a treat. Via the power of the internet connected to Yorkshire, to the northeast. It's the dream.
the wonders of Skype.
To give you a little picture, I'm currently talking to you whilst overlooking St. James's Park in Newcastle.
Oh, wow. Are you a Newcastle United fan?
I'm not. No, I think I kind of am by proxy, by virtue of me moving up to Newcastle about 3 years ago. So I've got a casual connection with it and a really good relationship with the guy who runs Nine Bar downstairs, which is the main thing.
All right. You say you moved there 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I was I'm originally from the West Midlands, from Worcester. The small mining town of Worcester down south, moving to the other mining town of Newcastle, as Michael Cole would call it. But work led me to the great northeast. So you can't see it right now, but I'm waving down towards your neck of the north. you dirty southerner, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I actually was reading an article the other day that Sheffield is part of the South, apparently. So, yeah.
Oh, we're pig-headed like that in the Northeast. Anything below the A19 is the South. So you're a southerner living in Sheffield. Well done. Like everyone is southern. The great thing is being from the West Midlands is that when I'm in London, everybody thinks I'm a northerner. Mm. When I'm in Newcastle, everybody thinks I'm a southerner. I'm neither. It's literally, the clue is in the name. It's the Midlands.
Somewhere in between. I mean, I noted there in the intro that, you know, you're not only a wrestling commentator, but you're a pro DJ with the national station Heart FM.
I wouldn't say pro.
Well, someone's paying you to be, I guess.
I am a radio presenter by trade. Yes, that's what keeps me out of trouble. I never like, and everybody's different from me, I never refer to myself as a DJ, because in my head, a DJ is the one that will do all the announcements at a wedding and at a birthday party, going, all the buffers open, go, I'm going to play, going to spin some vinyl for, you know. Like, that's a DJ to me. The discipline to do that is incredible. I can't do it. I've done probably two weddings as a DJ. I'm rubbish at it. So people get really offended when I get calls at work saying, oh, what do you charge to do a wedding? Like, oh, don't do them. Oh, what do you mean you don't do them? You're a DJ. Of course you do. Why don't you want to do a wedding? I said, no, I'm not. It's not that. I just don't do them. Here's some people who do. I work for Heart, which is in the northeast of England. There's Heart radio stations all over the country.
Yeah.
But I do Heart Drive Time in the northeast. So if you ever around Newcastle, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, Darlington, anywhere around there, anywhere in that bit of that bit of England that almost becomes Scotland, that's where I ply my trade Monday to Friday, and I love it. I'm very blessed in the sense that growing up there were three things that I was a massive passionate fan of, and it was radio, wrestling, and Sonic the Hedgehog. And I'm now working in two out of three of those. Two out of three of those are paying bills. I'm so lucky. I'm so happy.
So how did you become involved in a radio hosting then?
Well, when I was six or seven, I wanted to be a radio presenter. I just liked listening to the people talking between the songs. And I was part of a community radio station down in Worcester, where I did it for free, just learned how to do it to a vague extent. And then it's the age old story of once you've got enough stuff recorded, you can then send it out to bosses of other radio stations and say, hi, can you hire me please? And it's just this, for the when you're first getting in, and it's what's lovely now is I'm in a position where I can help other presenters get into the industry. Because I remember being that kid who couldn't get a break, where you'd send out demos and you either get nothing back or you get a boss saying, no, nothing for you. And it's a bit of you have to really harden your ego, because you'll get a lot of people saying, no, you're rubbish. Like bosses and people who listen. Like, it's a real ego hardener to do it, because you put your world out there and then people go, no, we don't like you. Oh, okay. but it was so I just pushed and pushed. I think I got my first paid radio job was reading travel news for a place called Telford in Shropshire. I had all the glam gigs, you see. and I did a breakfast show in Wolverhampton for a good couple of years. I had so much fun doing that. And then about 3 years ago, Heart came calling. I had a phone call out of the blue from Heart, who listened to what I was doing at the time and said, we'd like you to come work for us. And I'm now at a point where, like, I used to listen to Heart when I was growing up. It's a station I've always had such a love for. I've always enjoyed the way that people present on it, and I've always been a big fan of the style of music as well. So to actually be a part of that now is phenomenal. As we're talking right now, let you behind the curtain. Like, I'm going on air in like an hour and a half, and every day I'm so lucky. And some people will go, oh, that's cute. And some people will go, oh, I hate him already. I'm going to listen to the next podcast on it. But I'm so lucky that I wake up on a morning and I'm excited to go to work. That's cool. I'm one of the very lucky few. If you're in a position in your life where you wake up and you're excited to go to work, then you've arrived. There's nothing more you need. If you're excited to go to work, and I'm blessed because every day I am, because it's led me up here, it's led me to the Northeast, and it actually led me back into wrestling. Because when I was working in Wolverhampton, I kind of moved away from doing a lot of stuff. I did a few bits for a friend's wrestling company, which I'm sure we'll get to. moving up here and kind of going to see wrestling shows in the Northeast and making friends with people in the Northeast, it got me back into doing it again. I'm up here doing two out of three of my all-time favorite things. You know, how can you not wake up with a smile on your face?
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, it's like your dream job, and I imagine a lot of people wouldn't mind being a DJ. But what's some of the most common misconceptions that you find when you're talking to people about being a radio host, rather?
Good question. Obviously, we've discussed the fact that I'm not a DJ in any way, shape, or form. That we meet celebrities in that all the time. That's a real misconception. Yeah. Like, I think everybody thinks that I spend my weekends hanging out at international airports picking up pop stars, and we don't. We see the odd one, like the odd person. Like, if somebody's on a tour, we may get a chance to interview them. But a lot of people, a lot of pop stars and stuff don't do big rounds of interviews, because they may not need to. Like, Ed Sheeran is Ed Sheeran. He is a force of nature in his own right, so that he didn't need to do like a PR tour when he played St. James's Park for three nights, because they literally put up a website that said, Ed Sheeran's coming to St. James's Park, who wants tickets? And the website crashed, and they sold out an hour later. Like, you don't need to do any more PR. He's already Ed Sheeran. So we don't hang out with mad celebs all the time. We really don't. other misconceptions. I'm trying very carefully to not to give away any real tricks of the trade, because for me, it's a bit like being a magician, in the sense that when you watch a magician, you're like, wow, that's so cool. And when you learn what goes on behind it, you're either really disappointed or you go, oh, I want to do that more. And what I found is, with like coaching, with I coach a lot of younger presenters at student stations up here as well. And when you start to let them behind the curtain a little bit on what goes on, they're either really disappointed or they're like, that's really clever. I want to do that. And then you kind of pass on the craft to them. Here's another misconception. We don't just wing it, right?
Yeah.
like the show that I will do, I already know what we're playing, when we're playing it, what I'm going to talk about in each part of the show. I never just turn the mic up and just hope for the best. I don't trust myself enough. There is nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with preparing anything like that. I mean, spontaneity is not something that's just dreamed up on the spot. It is deliberately and efficiently planned out. And wrestling commentators will tell you the same thing. They might not. They might just go, no, I make it all up. But they're liars. If I'm working with a wrestling company on the Saturday and I know the matches that are coming up, I might have an idea for a line, for an off-the-cuff remark, and I will write it down and go, I'm going to get that into the match on Saturday.
Yeah.
Because there's no point in not thinking like that, because when you do think like that, the magic happens. And radio is very much the same. If I'll have ideas for stuff throughout the day, I'll write them down. I'll want to weave them in some way. And that's part of the craft of really strong radio presenting. Those are all the misconceptions and secrets I'm going to let you in on.
Right, thanks for those.
For this time.
Yeah. I mean, just before we move on to wrestling, you mentioned there about Jackie phoning up and requesting a song. What are some of your favourite and worst songs to play then?
I love all the songs I play.
Come on, there must be one you're like, not this one again.
And here's the other great misconception about it. I do, this might sound like a bit of a Ponzi answer, but this is generally how I feel about it. I do a radio show for other people. I don't do a radio show for me. Mm. I do a radio show for other people. So there might be a song that I don't like, but I know there's going to be lots of people who do like it. A lot of people don't like, here's a great example. When Robin Thicke Blurred Lines came out in 2013, I think, when that song came out, radio stations played it all the time. And the reason radio stations played it all the time was because people asked for it all the time. And that's not hyperbole. That's true.
Yeah.
I've been sat there some days during when I used to do like a request show on a Sunday, and we would get inundated with requests for Robin Thicke Blurred Lines. And then we play it, and then we get barraged of people going, why are you playing this? Why are you playing this? Like you, it's every song is somebody's favorite song. And it's not my job to poo-poo anybody's favorite song. If you're into 90s German techno violin music, then more power to you. It's not something I'm gonna go home and rush to get the back catalogue of, but hey, look, if it's something that makes you happy, then go for it. Who am I to tell you what's rubbish? That's me weaving out of that question.
well, that's fair enough, but
that's genuinely what I believe, though. Is like everybody's got a favorite something, and I see a lot of people get annoyed about like certain songs and people getting behind certain songs, and my reaction is always just let people enjoy things.
that's very true. That's a good attitude to have. Yeah. And moving on to wrestling now, and you always talk to people from the UK, and definitely people of a certain age, and either your parents were rich enough to have Sky or you managed to get somebody down the road to tape a WWF or TV. And I mean, what was the first WWF show that you managed to watch?
We had Sky. We were posh ones. we had Sky TV specially screwed into the wall, because back then it wasn't a case of just having like a box that picks up the Wi-Fi. We had to have holes drilled in the wall. Dad up there with the ladder fitting the satellite facing exactly a certain equidistance. it was a fine science. I remember watching WWF Superstars on Sky One on a Saturday. Seem to remember that, but I'm sure even before then it must have been the advent of Sky that got me into it, because I seem to remember being there for like being there around like when I was 6 or 7 or 8 years old watching it. I must have been at least 6 years old, because I remember crying when Hulk Hogan lost to the Ultimate Warrior.
I was
Hulkamaniac through and through, and my older brother Jim liked the Ultimate Warrior, so he was horrible. He was all jumping around and celebrating, and I was really upset.
That always seems to be a thing when you talk to people. Yeah, it's like especially when you have brothers. One of them was into Hulk Hogan, the other one was into Ultimate Warrior. So, were you following WWF for a number of years then?
I did. I followed it I must have followed it into my early teens. I remember my mum and dad surprising us one day with a trip to the NEC to watch it. They didn't tell us we were going until we got there. And I was like, oh my God, we're here. I was too small to see really any of the action that went on. But apparently on that night, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart had a four-star classic for the IC title.
Wow.
I don't know, I didn't see it. I think I dipped out just before the New Generation era. And then I sort of picked it up again I picked it up again in 1999 when I went to my cousin's house. He had WWF Warzone for the PlayStation.
Classic.
Oh, where everybody kind of had that John Wayne walk about them. You play that game now, everybody walks around the ring like they've just got off a horse. I don't know why. And they'd have to program that in. But I got back into it after playing that because I thought, oh, gosh, there's lots of new characters. And I ended up watching it on Sky One. I was like, oh, this is actually a bit edgier than I remember it. I'm like, no Hulk Hogan, none of that stuff. There's this guy called Triple H who seems pretty cool. I remember, yeah, that was the first time I watched it back. It was Triple H and The Rock in an I Quit match on Raw, I think it was, randomly. And I remember thinking, oh, I like Triple H and... who knew he'd go on to inherit the company?
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, you mentioned there about your WWF fandom. How did you first encounter the independent wrestling scene?
Oh, it would have been at Purdiswell Leisure Centre in Worcester when they had adverts on for live wrestling. This was after I'd got back into it. Mm. So this would have been 1999 when I was like 15 or 16. I remember going to a wrestling show with a few friends of mine, and it was a wrestling show that was advertising The Undertaker and the LOD. Like, wow, Undertaker and the Legion of Doom in Worcester? I've got to be there. Turns out that the LOD was one bloke.
the Legend of Doom, he's infamous.
Is he a real thing?
It was those tribute shows, wasn't it? I think it was the UK Undertaker and the Legend of Doom, and I think Ricky Knight, who most famously Paige's dad, I think he was one of the incarnations of the Legend of Doom.
Get out of town. Yeah. Well, I might have watched a Ricky Knight match.
Well, there you go.
Wow. I just died laughing. And that was it. And Spider-Man was on the undercard. Of course he was. That was the first time I knew indie wrestling existed. I was like, this is ridiculous. But you get so, but it's like, it's suddenly the big wrestling that's on the telly is suddenly in front of you in a weird form, but it's certainly in front of you. And that's dead exciting. That was the first show I watched. I think a few years later, back in that same arena, that Purdiswell Leisure Centre, I was at a show which featured Nick Dinsmore as Eugene. He'd left the WWE at this point. Rockstar Spud on the undercard, and Magnus, Nick Aldis, in the main event.
Oh, wow. Oh, I remember Eugene with a U, wasn't it?
That was it, yeah. He was, and my mate, my friend Tony, who please look him up, because he makes a career by being a fat tribute to Robbie Williams called Blobby Williams. And he was working at the local radio station at the time, and he got to come out to the ring with Eugene in this show as kind of like the connection to the local radio station.
Yeah.
And that was the second time I was at that same venue watching indie wrestling. But those are my first two insights into what indie wrestling actually was. And then in 2009, I moved to Shrewsbury for a couple of years when I was working on radio there, and a few friends I made there just set up a wrestling company. And it was the mindset being that if they were football fans, they'd have a footy match every week, but they're not, they're all wrestling fans. So let's put on a wrestling show. And there were some really, really good people in there involved in it. I'm going to name drop one of the people that got me in to this wrestling company in Shrewsbury. Doesn't exist anymore. It was called EDW. Was a guy who played a character called Jamie Future, whose real name is Liam O'Rourke, who has written the Brian Pillman book.
Ah, yes.
Fox. And it's so bizarre to hear him on so many different podcasts talking about it. Because I'm like, that's my mate. That's Liam. That's Liam talking about, like, he's always been a massive Brian Pillman fan. And when we worked together in Shrewsbury, it was like his character was very Brian Pillman inspired. And it was a true honor and a pastiche of Brian Pillman. And but it was what he was the one that kind of got me involved there, not as a wrestler. I've never had any interest in being a wrestler. I was brought in as the ring announcer, and then I became the commissioner because I like talking on the mic. So those are my early insights into indie wrestling before I moved up here.
And I think there were some bigger names on those shows, weren't there? Pete Dunne and Damian Dunne were maybe on those shows with Liam O'Rourke and the guys
That's
from Squared Circles.
That's some mad you've done right there, you clever, clever chicken. Yes, of course, I totally forgot. The Dunne brothers were on. I remember the Dunne brothers. I remember announcing the Dunne brothers coming out. And I was like, oh, they're cool. I like them a lot. And now Pete Dunne is obviously, boy, he's now Pete Dunne. And Damian Dunne is still one of the cleverest wrestlers around, and we're very blessed that up here in the Northeast, one of the companies I work for, which is North Wrestling, Deputy Dunne comes up to enforce the law very often, so it's always nice to see Damian. But I totally forgot that the Dunne brothers were on that show as well.
Yeah, but obviously not real brothers. I mean, we've got to talk about it now. You're most well known for doing the commentary for the Biggin in Wigan, a match that has gone down in infamy around British wrestling circles for all the wrong reasons. I mean, tell us what the Biggin in Wigan is and how you ended up doing commentary for it.
It just keeps on coming back.
It really does.
Like a bad penny just keeps coming back. So, are you familiar with a wrestling-based simulating game called Extreme Warfare Revenge, Mark?
Was it one of the many e-feds that was going around in the mid to early 2000s?
No, this was an actual game.
Oh, really?
A game that somebody had made where you ran your own wrestling company, like a football manager, but for wrestling.
Right.
It developed a big old following, and I was on the they had a message board that went with it. It was really active, and people would post their wrestling shows that they were doing on there and stuff like that. So I was a member of this group, and then one day somebody, and I wish I knew who, posted the match online, posted this really bad wrestling match on the Facebook, on the message board. This is before Facebook. This is before YouTube. This is before Twitter. This is really before social media. This is when it was message boards.
Yeah, the days of the message boards.
IRC chat rooms. And what happened was I downloaded the video to watch it, and I just decided, I had a morning off from college, I just thought, I'm going to do some commentary for this. I just thought it'd be a funny thing to do. Just to pop the people in the message board. So I recorded some commentary over it, and I put it back on, and went, "Ego, I've improved it somewhat," and it went everywhere. And that was never my intention. It was just something just to pop a few of the people I was chatting to in this message board, and then suddenly, like other people are talking about it in other message boards, and suddenly it's on, and YouTube comes around, and now it's on YouTube, and now in the advent of social media, I'm beginning to learn just how far this actually went. I'm still just about coming to terms with how far this went. Well, I'm getting messages every so often from I got a message out of the blue from Jimmy Havoc about it. Like, what's that? What a genuinely lovely human being. I should never be on his radar. But Jimmy, and then Grado suddenly popping up going, "You did the Biggin in Wigan. You're the effing man." I was like, whoa, thank you. Thank you very much. And my favourite, the favourite person that I shocked with it was Matthew from Botchamania.
Wow.
Who, me and Matthew, we worked together at North Wrestling up in Newcastle as their commentary team. So me and Matthew do commentary for North Wrestling, which you can find at northwrestling.pivotshare.com. Just putting that there. So it's lovely to work with someone like Matthew. I'd never had the chance to work with him before. And on the first night we get together to record, Matthew says to me, "Oh, have you ever done anything like this before?" I said, So no, I said, I did like, not really. I did like a joke match a few years ago. I did commentary over this bad wrestling match. And then he just looked at me and went, oh my God, Biggin and Wiggin. Yeah, that's me. I didn't know you did that. It genuinely blew his mind. Then he was like, I can't believe you did that. And the rest of the afternoon, he was like, I can't believe this. I can't believe you're the guy that's Biggin and Wiggin. It's one of them that I'm most proud of. And I do that impression of Matthew with his permission, because I've done it to his face and on stage with him. So he knows I do it. I love him to death. He is one of the driest human beings in terms of humor you will ever meet, but has such a wonderful soul and is such a fan of wrestling and such a fan of it all. And I can't say enough nice things about him. He's genuinely a lovely creature.
And we're moving back to the Biggin and Wiggin for a second.
Yeah, sorry,
is this okay?
Right old tangent there. My apologies.
Yes, no, don't worry about it.
Spread everywhere, and now it's the 13th anniversary. I'm finding out more and more about it. It was thanks to you actually that you shared it again. I now know who the referee is.
Oh yes, Mr. Andy Quilden from Revolution Pro Wrestling. And this is, for people who maybe, the few people that haven't heard of the Biggin and Wiggin, this is a match between Chris Spurls and Cage Tyler. And obviously, you mentioned there, you did a commentary after this match had happened, and this match really has to be seen to be believed. I mean, no offence to the guys, but it's absolutely terrible. And it's from the sort of like dark days of British wrestling. And it's on YouTube. Had hundreds and thousands of views now. And I mean, did you do the commentary all in one take? Because obviously that's what made it most infamous, your sort of like tongue-in-cheek commentary for this match.
From what I remember, yeah, it was all just, I just sat there with a cheap Windows microphone and just did it all in one go, just sat and played, press play, and just, and literally everything came out. So in a rare moment, like, there were some really good one-liners that were legit off the top of my head. I think I can't remember where I got Biggin and Wiggin from, because spoiler, wasn't even held in Wiggin, which makes it even weirder. But then a lot of the stuff just kind of was just me doing an over the top impression of somebody like a Jim Ross and just hyperbolizing to the nth degree. Clothesline from Hull, I think, I start to name some of these moves that they're doing, and these moves are dreadful. Chris Brawls does a lariat that I don't think would chip a wood chip board if it was upright, but then Cage Tyler, like a pro, hit the ground like he'd been shot.
Yeah.
And I just decided to call it the clothesline from Hull, because Hull was kind of near Wigan. I lived in the south at this point. I'd not been to the north. There was just a few other moments where, like, he put on like a figure four, and Chris Sprouls got out of the figure four by sort of standing up. It just didn't work. But instead of kind of pointing out that, I'm selling like the gargantuan feat of strength of Chris Sprouls, who on one foot is breaking this figure four headlock. At no point did I expose how bad it was. I just made sure everything made sense. I wanted to make everything make sense and make everything seem as completely over-exaggerated, over-hyperbolic as it could possibly be. And again, this wasn't like a... 'cause people do stuff like this now for the likes.
Yeah.
For the retweets, that's why people do it now. I did it, I guess, for the same reason. I did it to pop some friends on a message board. It was never something I thought would go any further, and then it did, and then it has. And what's come from this as well is obviously Chris Sprouls and Cage Tyler. Neither of them wrestle anymore. Chris Sprouls has gone very quiet. Cage Tyler, I spoke to him years ago and he told me he was retiring because, in his words, he couldn't get out of the shadow of that match.
Oh dear.
And obviously now Andy has I now know that it was Andy who was refereeing. It might be. I'm going to put this. It might be a coincidence. I don't know. But I've tweeted Andy a couple of times and he doesn't reply to me. And what I'd like to say, and I said this on another podcast where we talked about the Big in Wigan, is and this is kind of me cleansing my soul a little bit, is I'm 34 years old now, and I've made a bit of a life as somebody that always pays forward, gives positivity, you know, talked about with music and stuff, said like, let people enjoy things. You know, I'm not a big fan of just attacking people randomly online. I don't think it's very clever, but I'm also aware that that match that has become the room for wrestling may come across to some people as me being really mean spirited. And for the record, now I'm in a public forum, now we can talk about this, to Chris and to Cade and to Andy and to those involved with it, if it upset you, I'm really, really sorry. It was never meant to be anything more than just a dickhead messing about on a message board. And it does come back to haunt a lot. And I genuinely am sorry. If it has caused you bother, I'm laughing just to save myself. If it has caused you bother or is kind of surfaced in the wrong time, I'm genuinely very sorry. Genuinely. And I owe you a beer. Or you at least owe me a punch in the face as when you are willing to claim it.
There you go. I mean, I don't think Andy Q's too bothered about it. He was on his podcast recently, saying that he told him to go home halfway through the match. So there's that there.
Yeah, I you know, and Andy was very kind on the podcast actually, and Andy said, you know, why isn't, you know, talked about, said, why isn't this guy working commentary full time? I'm like, that's very sweet, and I did appreciate that, but I am sorry that it just keeps coming back up 13 years on.
Indeed. And it's on YouTube. Just type in the beginning Wigan and you can find it on there. And you mentioned a couple of times now you're doing a commentary for 3CW and North Wrestling. Was it the beginning Wigan that got you into that and got you noticed? I mean, obviously you mentioned the story about Matthew from Bostromania.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, to be perfectly honest. Like, I can't really remember the full conversation that I had, and when I moved up here, I got into wrestling again because I met up with, whilst helping to promote a show, I got talking to a guy called Howard Drake, who plays HT Drake, or he plays Drake. I genuinely think he is one of the finest wrestlers in the northeast of England. Like Matthew always refers to him as the northeast best kept secret, and I think that's true. I love the guy so much. When you meet him, he's so humble and he plays down what he does, but he's brilliant. And I'm very blessed that we get to hang out on a regular occasion. And his good lady as well. I want to give some love to Little Miss Roxy, to Donna. She's another force of nature in British wrestling at the moment, and may they both go on and do great things. And I met them both at a indie show that I went to on my own in South Shields, and we got talking. And Howard at this point was running a company called Absolute Wrestling. He was helping to run a company called Absolute Wrestling, and they were short a ring announcer for a show. So I was like, I've done it before, I'm happy to come on, we can give it a mention on the show, whatever. And I went and did the ring announcing for it, and I did one show, and they said we'd like to have you back for the rest of them, which is always a bit awkward when there was somebody already doing it. And I think it was one of the guys who was running the show was also ring announcing. So on this occasion, he was quite relieved. It's like, okay, we can just palm that job off onto somebody else. That's fine. So I started ring announcing, and then Andrew Bowers, who runs North Wrestling, was at one of the Absolute shows, and he came up and spoke to me after one, and he said, look, can we keep you in mind in case we need a ring announcer? And we got talking, and he was like, have you ever considered doing commentary? And I think then we talked about the Biggin and Wigan, and we laughed about it. He went, well, let's do something then. And then it was Andrew that got me and Matthew together to put some commentary on North Wrestling. And it kind of went from there. And so once I did North Wrestling, we put it out there, and I got offers from like other companies around here, 3CW, which is based sort of around Teesside. I'm now getting to work. And this is what's great about it, is because everybody gets on up here, and everybody's willing to share the love and share the fan support and stuff like that. So the fact that I can be involved with North Wrestling and be involved with others is wonderful. You know, because with 3CW, I get to work a very different kind of show, where I get to sit next to Stevie Aaron on an evening, and Stevie is the best wrestling ring announcer in the country.
Yes, definitely. He's underutilized.
Completely underutilized. And so it's great to actually get to hang out with, it's an excuse to hang out with Stevie Aaron, if nothing else, and hang out with Mike Groom, who runs the company and then comes and does color as well, which is, I mean, like color commentary. He doesn't just come and cut himself and then clear off again. A different thing. So it just, so once I did the stuff for North, so I needed a big thank you to North, because once I did North Wrestling, it kind of snowballed and I ended up doing several others. And there's, you know, there's a few others which I, which may come off down the road, which I can't speak of, but we'll see. It looks like I'm going to be busy for a while, which is great. And what's nice about it is that we're doing this at a point where there is such a spotlight on British wrestling, a brighter spotlight than there's ever been. So what a great time to be involved.
I mean, what can you, obviously you enjoy all the matches you commentate on, but what are some of the best matches that you've commentated on so far?
My favorites, that we had, I'm a big fan and of Session Moth Martina. I'm one of many who unashamedly hashtag Francis Martina. So I got to call a tag team street fight she was involved with at North Wrestling, and she's coming back to North in July, on July the 14th, which is a Saturday night. She's in the main event, so I get the chance to call her matches again, so I enjoyed calling that one. 3CW, back in January, my first night on the job, I get to call Justin the Hammer Sison versus Keith Lee.
That was a match and a half, yeah.
Phenomenal match between two incredible talents, one of which is now NXT bound, unsurprisingly. But that was great. That was just one of those moments where you pinch yourself a bit and go, is this really a thing that we're doing right now? It is, isn't it? That's a real thing. And so, yeah, those off the top of my head, those are... we'll probably end this interview and I'll go, I should have mentioned. But there's lots of love to watch. But in terms of the matches that I've called, I've really enjoyed doing those two that I can think of for now. But there's both Three Count Wrestling and North Wrestling have got their entire back catalogue online. You can listen for yourself and feel free to tell me if there was something I did that was better or worse. That'd be great.
Yeah, and certainly they've got a stacked lineup of matches on there on these on-demand services via Pivot Share. And I mean, you mentioned about Keith Lee and NXT there, and WWE have been making a big move into the UK recently. They launched the NXT UK brand last week. Did you manage to watch the latest UK Championship tournament, and what were your thoughts of it as a whole?
I did indeed. I loved it. It was because it was so different to the first time round. The first time round was just two nights based on the tournament. And this one just had a little bit more, a little bit more pizzazz to it. There was a nicer blend across the board of matches. You had the tournament stuff going on, but then you had that amazing six-man tag on the first night. You had the tag team title match on the second night that, my days, was absolutely stunning. And that reaction at the end when Mustache Mountain... which I don't think anybody thought they would do, which is why the reaction was so great. They didn't think they'd put the belts on Mustache Mountain that night. And they did. NXT Tag Team Champions, Trent Seven and Tyler Bate. What a dream. West Midlands represented.
Indeed.
But both nights were great. I think big love to Zach Gibson, who the WWE have obviously got big plans for. Since he was such a focal point of that tournament, and the fact that he won the whole thing, you know that's a good sign of things to come when you're shown in such a strong light like that.
Yeah, they really did a fantastic job with Gibson, didn't they?
They did. I like Zach Gibson. I thought, and I don't know whether it's me being a bit of a killjoy. I don't know why Shawn Michaels was there, really. I think it was nice to see him. It was lovely to see him. Looking more and more like someone's dad every day.
He looked weird with the haircut, didn't he?
Oh, I can't get used to it.
No.
I'm trying, and I love Shawn Michaels, but I can't get used to it. But it was weird that he just kind of came out and went, hello, I wrestled here once. Got a great night, bye. And I mean, it's good because I think had this tournament happened in 2006, he probably would have given Zach Gibson sweet cheer music at the end of the night, and it would have just killed everything.
Yeah.
It's been 06 WWE, but thankfully we're beyond that now. Excited for the launch of NXT UK. That's exactly what it needed to be as well, and we didn't know it. We thought they were going to launch WWE UK. I said, no, this is NXT UK, and that makes it even better because there's no preconception that this is like a British version of WWE. This is a training ground for UK talent. This is what NXT is all about. It's got that gravitas already, and I love it. And I'm really excited. And there's a lot of people that get upset about WWE sort of moving into the UK market. But there's plenty to go around. I'm a firm believer in there is plenty to go around. They're not going to swallow up in like a market. It's not like they're just kind of, it's not like they're going to do shows just in London and just cannibalize the British wrestling shows in London. They're doing them all around the country, and they're doing like one or two shows just around the country. And surely there will be like a butterfly effect when they do the Liverpool Olympia. Like for companies like Future Shock Wrestling in Liverpool, where suddenly there will be an increased interest in wrestling because of NXT popping up there. And also what it means is, obviously it means that WWE are now going to go on a higher spending spree and go back down the aisles of the Sainsbury's that is British wrestling and pick out some of their favorite things. But what that means is all these guys that are on the way up, there's room for them to come up. I've seen several sponsored Facebook posts from wrestlers who have said in their bio, like, great that NXT are taking some of the big talent to them because it leaves space for us. And that's exactly what it should be. You should now see all these great established guys move up to the next level, because then you're going to get a whole new level of young, hungry wrestlers filling those spots. And then everybody wins. I mean, I might be naive. I'm not a wrestling promoter. There might be wrestling promoters listening to this going, what is that moron talking about? This is the end of days. But from what I see, it's a good thing. Do you think it's a good thing?
Well, I don't know. I'm a bit trepidatious about it. Obviously, we've talked about Andy Quilden before, and he's already said that, you know, none of the WWE UK guys can appear on his shows anymore, so it's certainly not a good thing for him. But I do agree that with you. There's plenty of spots for people to take, so I'm just, you know, cautiously optimistic about it, and I guess it's a wait-and-see kind of thing.
Cautious optimism is a good way of looking at it. Cautious optimism.
I've got to ask you, as someone who's filled the general manager role on a show before, obviously Johnny Saint, complete and utter British wrestling legend, how did you find him as a general manager on the show?
I think once he learns it's a fatal four-way match,
yeah,
and not a four-way fatal match, then we're doing just fine.
Yeah, I think it was good for the behind-the-scenes stuff. It was more the live-in-the-arena stuff he might have struggled slightly with, yeah.
I think he's fine. I think he's a good strong pick. I think we're now with NXT. Like, NXT isn't one of those shows where the whole event is going to revolve around the authority figure. It never has really been.
Mm.
Like, William Regal isn't, like, a focal point in stories, nor will Johnny Saint be. But Johnny Saint's got that gravitas to play the NXT UK general manager, and there is going to be a moment, and like, because the general manager roles aren't massive in NXT, and I think as long as they're not making him the focal point of everything, then it'll be fine. Just having him pop up every so often and go, that's a match that's happening there.
Yeah.
Make this a match now. But then imagine the heat if on one occasion after years and years and years of Johnny Saint ruling the roost, just someone like a Zach Gibson just loses his mind with him and just pops him in the face. The heat for attacking Johnny Saint.
It would be quite the thing. And
putting Johnny Saint in the Shankly gates, like, that'd be huge. But
it would,
I'm
it
fine.
Would be.
I'm fine with Johnny Saint. I like Johnny Saint. He's lovely.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. Like I said, he's a legend. It was just it reminded me a lot of Jack Tunney from the early WWF days.
Oh, God. Now you say it. Yeah, he was a bit Jack Tunney, wasn't he? Oh, God.
And before we wrap this up, so we're halfway through the year. What can people expect coming out of the world of Tom Campbell for the rest of the year?
I'm dropping my debut album. I'm not. That's a lie. It's an absolute lie. What's happening? Just more of what we're doing now. I all being well, I shall still be on air up here in the Northeast. I will be, and no doubt everywhere else. Every so often, they let me play on another Heart site. I've done a few times. I've done Heart round your way. I've done Heart in Yorkshire.
Cool.
So they let me play on there every so often, so which is quite fun. But more of that, and I've got a whole diary full of wrestling events from multiple companies. Some I'm working for the first time. Some I've been working for a long time. Which is keeping my weekends nice and busy. But I don't want to give too much of the game away at this point. And you can follow me on Twitter at Tom Campbell. And anything that is happening that is relevant that you I think would interest you, I'll let you know on there. Or it will just be like just gifs of DuckTales. I mean, that's on there quite a bit as well.
Classic.
That's my life mainly.
There's a lot more to it than that. Well, Tom, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today, and thanks for joining us.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. Let's do this again soon, yeah?
Definitely.